here's the beautiful thing about it. You can develop an internal motivation. You can develop an internal drive.
Winning habits, winning routines, and a winning mindset.
You're the main character of your own life story.
Welcome to the Susan Sly Project, where entrepreneurs rule, startups launch, and the side hustle becomes the main hustle. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Susan Sly.
All right, everyone. So imagine interviewing not some of, but all of the top entrepreneurs in the world to the point of 3,000 interviews. You think you would learn a thing or two? My guest today not only served in the US military, he dabbled in law school. And then he said, forget this nonsense. There's something more for me. He has taken his podcast, Entrepreneur on Fire, to one of the top podcasts in the entire world with over 1 million listeners every single month and 7+ figures in annual revenue. And we're going to jump right in. John Lee Dumas, thanks for being here today.
Susan, I am fired up to be here. We're going to have a great conversation about a lot of great topics. So hang on tight.
Oh yeah, bring it on. So let's jump right in. You know, we have people listening in 95 countries right now. I have been a serial entrepreneur and psychologically unemployable since I was 11 years old. And in your opinion, I just had Steve Sims on the show. I asked him the same question, you know, concierge to billionaires. What's the difference between an entrepreneur and a wantrepreneur?
Listen, an entrepreneur has identified a real problem that exists in this world, like an actual pain point. And they've created not just a solution, but the best solution to that real struggle. And then they found the audience to serve that solution to. That's an entrepreneur. That's what I did back in 2012 when I launched the first daily podcast interviewing entrepreneurs. Because Susan, Entrepreneurs on Fire was the best daily podcast interviewing entrepreneurs the day that I launched. It was the worst daily podcast interviewing entrepreneurs the day that I launched. It was the only daily podcast interviewing entrepreneurs the day that I launched. It was the only show in town. So it was the best solution for someone that wanted that daily dose of inspiration. That's why I won, period.
And you have been a vanguard for podcasters. There are a lot of podcasters I've had on my show. There are lots of people out there. Who should do a podcast and who shouldn't?
Listen, it's simple. If you have identified a real pain point, a real problem that you want to solve, and you connect with a medium like podcasting that's audio only, that's on demand, that's targeted content, deliver that solution on this platform, grow an audience that knows, likes, and trusts you, then ask that audience, hey, I've been providing this amazing solution to you for a long time. What currently, above and beyond this, is your biggest struggle right now? What's your biggest struggle? Listen to what they tell you, and then identify which one of those major struggles you want to create as a premium, high-level paid solution. Maybe that's one-on-one coaching, a mastermind, a product, a service, SaaS, software as a service, whatever that looks like. That's how you turn this podcasting thing of delivering great value into a business. That's how you're going to win.
I love that. Well, I want to go really deep in the weeds. Currently, and as you know, I'm a co-founder of an AI company. Mm-hmm. And so we're leaning in, getting closer to $100 million valuation. We specialize B2B enterprise model. And it feels like everyone and their dog is doing a startup right now. And startups are no joke. I know you have interviewed many founders, a lot of investors, people like Gary Vee, Barbara Corcoran. Let's jump into the weeds. Why do you think it's startup fever right now? And let's talk about why the failure rate is so high with startups.
Well, you said the word dog. So first off, let's give a shout out to Gus. He is just the most adorable golden doodle in the world. He is the best. But listen, the reality is we all have dreams. We all have aspirations. And we see, you know, Elon Musk, who had a dream for electric cars, for batteries, for the Boring Company to go to Mars, just become the richest person in the world, where he then tweeted, weird. Now back to work. Because guess what? For him, it's not about the money. It's not about the valuation. It's about the creations that he's doing. Those are people that are winning. So if you are one of those people for, you know, that it's about the creation, it's about the impact, it's about, you know, changing the world on whatever level you want to change the world on, then this is a reason to get into it. And the reason why most people fail, most startups fail and flop, to your point, is they don't go into it with that mentality. They go after it because they want to get to, you know, a $100 million valuation that they own a tiny slice of, and then it goes public and they get their payout and then they're off to the beaches, which is fine. And that's totally cool if you want to do that. But your chances of success are much lower because you're not trying to change the world. And not everybody, by the way, should try to change the world. Like, honestly, like, I'm only trying to make my small impact in my small part of the world. My business has been netting 7 figures a year for 8 years in a row. I'm not into the 8 figures. I'm never going to be into the 9 figures. And I'm okay with that. Like, I have 5 people. I typically work 3 to 5 days a month, like hardcore, like really grinding. And the rest of the month, I'm doing whatever I want to do. I'm here in Puerto Rico. I'm hanging out with my dog and my pool, my fiance, and doing my thing, like all of those things, because that's the life that I want. That's the business that I want. If I wanted to grow a 9-figure plus company, it'd be a different ballgame. And I applaud people who want to do that. And I root for people that want to do that and are trying to do that. But I just want them to make sure they're looking in the mirror and they're doing what they really want to do, not what they think they should do. Because my business, 5 people, very flexible hours. I travel the world for 90 days a year, literally gone off the grid. That's what I want. That makes me happy. And I know that. And by the way, I went through my grinding season. I had to put in the work for 3, 4, 5 years to get to the point where I can now do this. It wasn't day one, but I was always very intentional about the kind of business that I was growing and the kind of business that I was building. That's why I've succeeded on my level, which some people would be like, bro, you're thinking too small. Maybe for your trajectory, but not for mine.
It's interesting you say that. And I love, it's doing what you want to do, what you're passionate about doing versus what you think you have to do. There are a lot of people out there with entrepreneurial ADD. And I've built 3 award-winning sales channels, 1 in technology, 1 in fitness, 1 in health, and totaling $1.7 billion. And I've had a couple of decades of grinding, let's put it that way, JLD. But everything I do because I want to do, because it adds value to not just people, to the world. And let me ask you this. There are people who are cut out for entrepreneurship, and there are people who absolutely should stay employed for longer until they really get it right. And what in your, I mean, I would consider you a global expert on entrepreneurship because you've interviewed 3,000 entrepreneurs. In your opinion, how do you know if someone's ready to become an entrepreneur or not?
So basically, I want to add a third category. There's people who should never become an entrepreneur. And that's fine too, because number 37 at Facebook, by the way, is a lot richer than 99.9% of the world. If like that's, you know, a number you're going after, because they found their niche, they're contributing to a massive, a great company, and they're doing good things. So like, somebody should be a number 2. There should be number 10s and number 100s in companies, because that could be what their lifestyle design is. And that's kind of where I'll go back to with what you're saying is like, you're doing what you're doing by design. This is your lifestyle design, my lifestyle design. And everybody's lifestyle design should look different. And you need to be sitting down and being intentional about it. So when it comes, again, to being an entrepreneur, you know, I have a whole 17-step roadmap. We can talk a little bit more about that later. But those 3,000 interviews that I've done with successful entrepreneurs, plus running a multi-million dollar net profit a year business for 8 years in a row now, that's allowed me to say, this is what works, this chronological 17-step roadmap. And to one of your points, Susan, about, you know, whether people should be an entrepreneur or not, or what, if they're ready to make the leap or not, I truly believe, like, if you follow this 17-step roadmap and at the 6-month points, you haven't achieved some version of uncommon success, as I define in the book and take you through that process, you should not be an entrepreneur. It's just not cut out for you. And that's fine. And a lot of people will spend years and decades grinding on something that never is going to work in the first place and wasting all that time and energy when they could have been slotted into the right place and gone off and built the perfect life and business that they want. And that's what I think people need to identify. So it is trial by fire. Because you want to get in there, go all in, and figure it out quick. I'd rather learn tomorrow or next month that this wasn't for me, you know, building a, you know, a venture capital, you know, backed business. I want to find out if that's for me or not right away, not 4 years from now. So I can then shift and try something different and see if that's for me. And that's what I was doing for so long when I just finally just slotted into Entrepreneurs on Fire. It's my business. I'm not part of a network. I'm not part of any conglomeration. It is just me. I haven't sold out to Spotify like Joe Rogan did. Although if Spotify wants to offer
me a very good paycheck for that.
If Spotify wants to pay me $100 million, we'll at least have a conversation. But you know, I'm running my own business down here in Puerto Rico. I'm keeping all the money I make with a 4% tax, no federal, no state. I've designed this, 5 people, myself, Kate, and 3 virtual assistants. Life is good. This is my business, my design. That's where people should be focused.
My husband listens to every episode. He's a CPA, JLD, and I know what he's going to say. We should look at Puerto Rico after this episode.
No. Look, if your husband's listening, my honest advice is don't even think about moving to Puerto Rico until you're ready to keep the money you make. Until you're ready to keep the money you make, you should stay where you are.
That's going to be a conversation over our next date night. Thank you. Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome. Or as they would say in Puerto Rico, bienvenidas.
The interesting thing you brought up was entrepreneurial voyeurism, let's call it.
Okay.
And whether you're a 2 at a company, my friend was, I think, employee 17 at Yahoo or something like that. He made enough money to like just never work again. There are lots of opportunities for investment. So, you know, like Tim, I know you've had Tim Ferriss on your show. Oh, yeah. Tim grinded. Then he did 4-hour work week. And, you know, everyone's drinking, what was a liter of wine that you were supposed to drink in 4-hour body? I can't remember all of the 4-hour things Tim did. And then he shifted into the investment world. So let me ask you this. In your opinion, what makes a good company? What are the tenets of that?
So the tenets of a good company, number one, is to have a very clear list of your orders of value. And to me, this is a really critical point that I can go to a lot of business owners and say, what are your tenets of value? Like, what is your value system? Like, what do you really want? You know, number one, your vision for this business to be. But number two, like, do the people that are on your team in your business also adhere and believe in these same vision points? And, you know, you shouldn't have like 20 different points. It should be, you know, keep it clean, 3 to 5, like really clear that everybody can get them on board with and make that happen. And everybody's vision and everybody's tenets and everybody's, like, so to speak, mantra can and should be different because everybody's in different industries, different goals, different aspirations. But the reality is, if you can't go to your, you know, 17th employee and ask them, hey, what do you feel like the vision of this company is in this business? If I was like per se, like interviewing people in a business and I asked them that question from an outsider's perspective, if they couldn't snap their fingers and just like light up and say, this is what we're all about here, then you're not building the right team, you're not building the right business, and you're not communicating in an effective manner. And so I've seen businesses that do that really well go on to great success. And the businesses that kind of skip over that part because they're focusing on other things, they always kind of seem to have like that shaky wheel that eventually falls off and kind of causes the whole, you know, business to implode from the inside out. And I've seen this time and time again, because, by the way, now that I've interviewed 3,000 successful entrepreneurs, a lot of those, by the way, have been repeat guests who've come on 4, 5, 6, 8 years later in some cases. And Susan, that wheel fell off that was going for them back in 2014, 12, 15. And when I interviewed them again, it was a whole different company, a whole different business with a nice tale about, you know, and by tale, I mean story about why that initial business that they may have been on the show for fell apart. And that's always because of that core tenet not being addressed.
And I love that you brought that up because it's that duplication throughout the company. At some point, I know the startups that I invest in startups where I believe in the team. And Steve Sims and I were talking about Elon, and because Elon was a client of Steve's, and we're talking about when Elon tried to get the meeting with Tim Cook to sell Tesla to Apple. And thank God that didn't happen. And investment disclosure, I'm an investor in Tesla. So I would just disclose that for my attorneys. They like that stuff. But, you know, I want to ask you, how important are the founders in your opinion?
They're everything. The founders, it's the lifeblood. It is the beating heart of that company. And by the way, something to talk about founders to go like next level deeper on this, the founder that brought that company from 0 to 1 million may not be the person to run the company to take it to 10 million and is almost definitely not going to be the person to go from 10 to 100 million. So just because the founder founded the company, they may need to find different roles as that company grows. I really hope they're able to find roles where they're very, you know, integrated into the company, into the business, and they continue that ethos of that. But they need to find different niches and different roles. And a lot of times, you know, it's because founders don't do that, they end up taking their own company down because they're just not the right person to be doing that thing because they have a zone of genius. They have a zone of fire. Why not find the perfect place for you as a founder in that company? And that doesn't have to be the CEO. That could be many different opportunities within that that fits your actual zone of genius. And this is one thing that happens in corporate that's terrible is you have the best salespeople that are crushing it for sales for this company. What happens? Oh, they're the number one in sales. Let's promote them to a manager. Now they're a terrible manager per se. Some of them become great managers, but some of them don't. They're terrible managers. And now you have a terrible manager doing a terrible job and you've taken away one of your best salespeople. So it's a double negative. And that happens in corporate America all the time. When I was working in the corporate finance for John Hancock, I saw that every single day. In fact, they tried to promote me to manager and they honestly did because I was number one on the sales desk for like 3 months straight. And I said, A, look at my commission check that I made from these last 3 months. It's more than the base salary of a manager who gets no commission. Why would I ever do that just for like to be call myself the manager? And B, I'm great as a salesperson. I promise you, I'm going to be a bad manager. So keep me in my role where I thrive. That needs to happen in the entrepreneurial startup world as well.
That's a beautiful, beautiful perspective because, and I love that you brought up sales because there are a lot of, a friend of mine, she was one of the co-founders of GoDaddy. So she had a very significant exit when they sold and she started a VC fund. And she said, Susan, there are a lot of techie people who get together, but they don't have the sales and business side of things. And they have great ideas, but those ideas will never turn into 8 and 9 and 10 figure businesses. They just won't. And then there are a lot of people selling hype who don't have a tangible product. And that tends to be fleeting. You mentioned zone of genius. Let's go there. I was having dinner recently with Fred Wynn, and Fred Wynn's best friend in school was Tony Hsieh. I loved Tony. I mean, it's such a loss in my opinion to the entrepreneurial world. And we were talking about the rarefied air of the people like the Tony Hsieh's or the Elon Musk's or the Steve Jobs. And you've interviewed these people. This is not, I decide to start a business or I'm making money on ClickBank and I call myself an entrepreneur. These are the people who change the world. What is the difference between someone like that and the rest of the pack?
So what I loved again, kind of going back to Elon Musk's tweet when he became, you know, at least for the day and, you know, for the foreseeable future until, you know, Tesla stock takes an inevitable dip before it, you know, potentially jumps back up again, you know, the stock market. But, and he became the richest person in the world. You know, he said, weird, now back to work. That's what separates the people that really, you know, thrive in this world from the people that don't. They're in it, you know, for reasons that are more than just, what is the valuation? What is my net worth? What is X? What is Y? What is Z? But what is the impact that my business is making? And for Elon, it's getting to Mars. You know, it's changing the energy, how we consume and produce energy in this world. It's, you know, changing transportation, you know, with the Boring Company. It's all of these things. Like that's his heart. That's his mission. You know, Tony Hsieh, you know a lot more about him than I do. But, you know, for me, like looking as an outsider in, it's like he believed at the core that he could create a company that was so customer centric that no matter how much the numbers didn't make sense, free shipping there, free shipping back, all these different things, that he could make a business work on that philosophy. And he did. Zappos. And then boom, Amazon acquires it for, you know, astronomical figures. So that's, to me, what the difference is between the Tony Hsieh's and the Elon Musk's. And by the way, 100,000 plus people that we'll never hear about because they're just, you know, not in the public eye. They're doing different things, different worlds, but they're still running unbelievably successful companies, and they're doing it potentially until the day they die, because, you know, why would they stop? They're doing what they love. That is, over the 3,000 interviews that I've done, those are the people that are still today doing what they're doing because they have that ethos, that mentality. And again, I've told you, not everybody's a success story from Entrepreneurs on Fire. I've interviewed 3,000 people who were at the top of their game. There's hundreds that are still crushing it, maybe into the thousands, but there are also hundreds and into the thousands of people that have completely had to hit the reset button for various reasons, because it is a roller coaster. It's the ups and the downs. And I know my reset button's coming up at some point in my life. Maybe it's the day that I die and I hit that reset button as I go away. Or maybe it's in 5 years when just there's a shift and something changes. Maybe it's in 5 months. I mean, we don't know. But again, I'm always very intentional about how I'm spending my days, because how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And if I'm not spending my days the way that I want to, I take that shift. And just before I kind of like ended this little rant right here, Steve Jobs' quote I love is, if you look in the mirror too many days in a row and you're not excited about what you're doing that day, it's time to make a shift. And it's not like every day you need to be like, this is the best. I'm so excited about my day today. Like, you're going to have off days and bad days. And that wasn't his quote. It was too many days in a row. If that happens 5, 10, 20 days in a row, then you've got a problem. You've got to look at it. Otherwise, keep on rocking it.
You mentioned the ups and the downs and the reset button. How important would you say failure is to success?
It's everything. That's why for 2,000 episodes in a row, the first question I ask every successful entrepreneur, tell me your biggest entrepreneurial failure, your flop, because we learn so much from failure that potentially we can avoid as listeners, as consumers of this content. Failure is everything. And that's why I love learning from other people's failures to hopefully avoid a lot of them. You can never avoid all failures because it's going to be part of your life. And it's going to make you, you know, more anti-fragile, by the way, which is an amazing book by Nassim Taleb that I highly recommend, Becoming Anti-Fragile. And that's what failure does to you. It makes you more anti-fragile. So it's everything.
I asked you that deliberately because I've listened to a few of your shows. I want to a couple more quick questions. And I know you've got an incredible book coming out that can be pre-ordered. I want to ask you about habits. So 3,000 interviews, what habits do you say you would associate with some of the most successful entrepreneurs? Because I'm a big believer in modeling. You know, like I was a millionaire at 24. I lost it all. Then I was homeless and I came back and I was a millionaire 3 years later. I think that we can out-habit anyone. And if our habits are aligned with the habits of someone who's achieving success, provided we're aligned with their morals and values, eventually we'll become successful. Let's talk about habits. If you could list, you know, 3 to 5 that our listening and viewing audience go, wow, if I do those, I know I'm going to be further ahead at the end of this year. What would they be?
So I'm going to list 3 things. They're not specific habits because I feel like everybody's going to hone their own skills. I mean, there's things you should always do. You should always be getting at least 8 hours of sleep, hydrating, exercising, preferably in the morning, like getting your vitamin D, like meditating, journaling, like all those things. And like, you know, that's part of it. But I want to be like something, I want to share some, 3 things that are tenets that you need to integrate as habits into your life. Number one, you have to be productive every single day. And what do I mean by productive? Not just being busy doing X, Y, Z. No, you need to be producing the right content. That's what being productive is. You're producing the right content. Right now, Susan, I'm being productive because I'm producing the right content with you on the show. This is my zone of fire, my zone of genius. I am being productive right now. So few people are productive. They think they are. They're not. 2, disciplined. You have to become disciplined. It's going to be just a habit of yours to be disciplined. What does that mean? Be a disciple of a plan of action. Have a plan of action and then being a disciple. The reason why I'm alive today, I'm not trying to be dramatic. I'm alive today because I was a disciple to a plan of action. I was an officer in the U.S. Army, spent 13 months getting shot at in Iraq as a tank commander in charge of 4 tanks and 16 men. I faced potential death every single day for 13 months. But because I was a disciple to having a plan of action, I made it through those 13 months where, unfortunately, many of my comrades and friends did not, making the ultimate sacrifice. Number three, you have to be focused. That has to be a daily habit of yours. Follow one course until success. Focus. If you have those three tenets, you're productive, you're disciplined, you're focused, you are going to win.
Productive, disciplined, and focused. And thank you for your service, by the way. I wanted to say at the top of the show, I served my country. I'm originally Canadian.
Love it.
Yes.
I served with a lot of great Canadians in Iraq. Love that military branch.
Well, fun fact, my husband was the controller for the joint base in Afghanistan around the time where you were serving. So he was buying tanks and all kinds of cool stuff. So
yeah, that's what I did.
Shout out to my husband. I don't give him a shout out every show, but you know, now he's getting two in one show.
Double the pleasure for your husband today. I love it.
Yeah. So let's finish with this. Firstly, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being such an inspiration. We were talking just before we went into the show. I had seen you speak at the beginning of your career.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit of that backstory. I was pivoting back into technology. I was coding some of the early facial recognition back in 1991. Then I left all that, went into the health and fitness world, came back into technology. And as I was doing a lot of soul searching and really thinking about my area of genius, you were one of the people all those years ago that inspired me to say, you know what, screw it. You, no matter how long it takes, this is where you need to be. And so that was on that journey. So thank you. Let's talk about the book. I'm so excited for your book. I'm pre-ordering after we're done this show, but let's talk about, this is your first published book. Who is it for? What is it about?
Thank you for that opening. And I appreciate your pre-orders because pre-orders mean everything for a successful book launch. So we're making it irresistible for everybody that's listening. And let me tell you why. I spent the last 8 years interviewing over 3,000 successful entrepreneurs, not to mention being a multi-million dollar a year entrepreneur myself. We're talking net profit 8 years in a row now. You know, we're super transparent. I love the fact that we've published 89 monthly income reports in a row on our website with our accountant, with our lawyer, just to provide so much value, open and honest transparency as we can to help other people on their journey. And after these 3,000 plus interviews, I've said, you know what? There are tenets to success. In fact, I identified a 17-step roadmap chronologically, step one to step 17, that will lead people to uncommon success. And I get into what uncommon success means in this book and how you define your uncommon success. So the title, it just came to me, The Common Path to Uncommon Success, because it is not a complicated path. It is a simple path. It is a common path, but you need to follow it to get to your version of uncommon success. And I went all in on this, like you mentioned. I partnered with HarperCollins, one of the big five publishers. It's been personally read and endorsed by Seth Godin, Gary Vaynerchuk, Neil Patel, Erica Mandy, Dory Clark, like super proud of that list. And I am going all out right now on the pre-order side of things because that makes all the difference in the world for when Amazon makes their bulk order. So I'm like, how can I make this pre-order of a $17 book that has millions of dollars, priceless value within, again, 8 years of my life and 3,000 interviews and just of all the people, how can I even make it more of a no-brainer? Well, number one, every single person who pre-orders the book and just pre-orders the book, I'm shipping all three of my journals, my Freedom, Mastery, and Podcast Journal to your door. So we talked about productivity, discipline, and focus. The Mastery Journal, by the way, teaches you how to become those things, how to master those three skills in 100 days. The Freedom Journal is about accomplishing your goals, and the Podcast Journal is obviously about crushing your podcast. You get $150 worth of journals for free, shipped to your door when you pre-order a $17 Kindle, because we're going all out on this. It's not about for us you know, making the most money on this book, of course, because we wouldn't be doing this if we were. It's about making the biggest impact, getting this book into your hands so you can get your uncommon success. We, by the way, have four other amazing bonuses also, all of which disappear, by the way, on March 23rd. These bonuses are only available for those who pre-order. So if anybody wants to learn more about the book, I have a great video and details and all that jazz. UncommonSuccessBook.com. UncommonSuccessBook.com. Go check it out. Get your pre-orders in, multiples, get some for your friends and your family. We have amazing bulk buy offers too, by the way, Susan. One of them is a full weekend experience with myself and Kate down here in Puerto Rico. We fly you down here first class, and you will leave after those 3 days just on fire. So super excited. Thanks for letting me chat about that, and ready to rock.
Absolutely. UncommonSuccessBook.com. I am getting mine, and I know all of our listeners
will. Your husband too.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't share with him. You can't share. Got to get to.
Watch out. He might be your neighbor. It's always good to have a CPA as a neighbor, but I'm just saying.
Empty lot right next to me. Mr. Sly, come on down.
Yeah, now he's been mentioned 3 times in the show. So this is like more than all of the shows.
Well, hey, listen, if you want to get your wife the best present ever, go and order the 300 books on the bulk buy. Sorry, the 1,200 books on the bulk buy. And you're going to spend a whole weekend at my house here in Puerto Rico with Kate and myself. It'll be an amazing couple's weekend.
Outstanding. All right. Well, JLD, thanks so much for being here. I encourage everyone to pre-order the book. And with that, this has been another episode of the Susan Sly Project. We will see you on a future episode.
To find out more about Susan or hire her to speak, go to www.susansly.com. You can also find Susan on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.